We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Longest 10 seconds of my life. So thanks everybody for joining us. As you can tell, this is not going to be your average run-of-the-mill webinar. We've got two really, really spectacular educational leaders here with us today to talk about tech savvy leadership, if Stephen can talk correctly today. I think we're in for a real treat and we're going to have a really good time. So just so that you know who's here, we have Amber Tiemann. Amber is a dear friend of mine. She's a principal from Texas. You can follow her on Twitter at @aamber8. And we'll learn a little bit more about Amber as we go through the day today. And then Tony, another one of my dear friends, who's an assistant superintendent, who probably has one of the coolest jobs that I've seen anybody have in a really long time, based on the pictures, just of the pictures I saw today on Twitter. Really, really awesome. From New York, you can follow Tony at Tony Sinanis. And I'm Stephen Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Web20 Classroom, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about tech savvy leadership today. So today we're going to talk about tech savvy leadership. And when Lisa and I started talking about doing some panels and putting these things together, this was kind of the first idea that we had. And when I sat down to think about who do I want to talk about tech savvy leadership, who do I know that embodies tech savvy leadership, there wasn't any other names that came to my list except Tony and Amber, because they, to me, embody everything that it means to be a tech savvy leader. And so I think it would be totally and completely beneficial for everybody to hear a lot of the things that they're going to say today. And so I think you're in for a real treat to hear from them about their journey to becoming tech savvy leaders and the way that they do their work, and some suggestions for you all that you can take away to be a more tech savvy leader. And when we talk about leadership, we're not just talking about the role of the, you know, traditional school leader. Obviously they're leaders in their own communities, but these could be any type of leader. These could be teacher leaders. These could be anybody who has any type of position in a school can benefit from anything that we're going to talk about today. So again, we want your input. We want you to be involved. Somebody from Bahrain. That's awesome. We want you to describe what your vision of tech savvy leadership is in one word. Now, this is something I do when I talk about tech savvy leadership, and when I'm in a room full of superintendents, I preface this by saying I know that superintendents and principals and the like are very, very good at combining words and stringing them together to make them look like one word. We want one word to describe tech savvy leadership, and you can go ahead and put that in the chat. And then I'm going to come to Tony and Amber to get their word. And so let's see. High Point. Hey, I'm from Winston-Salem. That's awesome. Connected. Relationship. Peggy. Peggy says relationships. Engaged. Experimental. Engaged. Fearless. I like that one. Fearless. Mm-hmm. Flexible. Aware. Communication. Innovative, curious, experimental, fluid, persistence, team player, those crazy North Carolinians, collaborative, relationships, engaged. So Tony and Amber, so what do you think? What do you think is, what's your one word to describe tech savvy leadership?
Amber, you want to go first?
I will let you go first, Mr. Sinanis, Dr. Sinanis.
The first word that comes to mind for me is accelerate. I think of technology as an opportunity to accelerate my learning, to accelerate the professional development of our staff, and to accelerate our story. So it goes beyond the context of our school in sharing and engaging our families using different digital platforms. So accelerate is the first word that comes to mind.
Well, I like that A word. I'm going to go with another A word and say agile. I think it's important for a leader to recognize that you don't have to be the person who can do all and be all for all the things for all your teachers. But you do have to be, as many of our people are saying over there, you have to be able to be flexible and aware of what's going on. Have to be agile. You have to know that there are cutting edge trends and things are changing as fast as we're figuring them out, and be able to say, Yes, you can take that risk. Yes, I'm willing to entertain that concept or that conversation, or tell me more how that's going to benefit students. Because kind of like that accelerate word, it all starts with student learning. If mm-hmm. it's not going to do that, if it's pretty and shiny, but it's not going to accelerate, then I'm not interested in it necessarily complicating our classrooms. So I think that a leader needs to be agile and kind of able to go with the flow.
Mm-hmm. Do you see how lucky y'all are? Do you hear how smart they are? So to me, my word is what Alexandria from Oregon said. Mine is growth, in that as a tech savvy leader, not only do we have to recognize that, you know, education and learning is ever changing, but we also have to know and understand what to look for and then realize what may work and what may not. And that all to me comes back to growth and having that mindset of understanding I don't know everything, and that's okay that I don't know everything, but I'm going to mm-hmm. recognize that I don't, and then take the necessary steps to better understand, whether it's going and learning on my own or going and participating in a session like this and trying to have a better understanding, or leaning on the people who do know and allowing them to help guide me in my decision making. So there's nothing in here, nimbleness, there's nothing in here I wouldn't disagree with. And I think all of us can agree that, you know, a good tech savvy leader embodies all of these things. So let's really get into some of the meat of this. You know, both of you all are seeing this transition from kind of this teacher-centered environment without technology to now we've got more districts who are going one-to-one, more districts who are doing BYOD, more districts who are rolling out various technology initiatives. You know, so a lot of times the folks who are really in charge of those initiatives are the technology department, the CTO, the instructional technologists, but those aren't the only people that are affected by these transitions. So when I was a technology director and instructional technology director, you know, I oversaw a complete digital transition in my district through BYOD, but it didn't just affect me, it affected everybody. And so we had to take precious amounts of time talking to students and teachers and leaders especially. And so that's where I want to focus in with you all for the first few moments. What role do non-technology leaders take in these processes of rolling out these technology initiatives? What is it that they have to do? What is it that they have to understand to make those initiatives successful? Because it's not just, again, not just the job of that technology director or the technology department. It's the job of everyone to ensure that success. So what do you all think is the role of that non-technology leader in that process?
Can we go, Tony?
Yeah.
I think that recognizing the sustainability means that you're going to have buy-in. You're going to have the support of your teachers. You're going to have them to be able to entertain the notion of transitioning their classrooms the way that you spoke of. It's not so much as just introducing a device, especially with BYOD. My kids can bring whatever they want to school. That could be an Amazon Fire tablet. It can be an iPad. It could be a Chromebook. To expect my teachers to support all those things obviously is not what my role is, but to encourage them to work with kids and figure out a solution. I think that's the first thing, which goes back to Stephen's word, and that's that growth mindset. It's going to look differently than what we've done in the past, even if you have a cart of all the same device, that's going to look differently than students bringing in a different tool for a different day. And I would even argue that different tools have different purposes in a classroom. And the things that I can do with an iPad may be different with the intentionality of what I can do with a laptop or a Chromebook. So for me, my job is just to be the conversation piece in between the two departments, if you will. Make sure that I recognize the teacher end and what's important to them, which is going to be the management, which is going to be the ease of use, which is going to be the connectivity. How's it going to fit into the existing curriculum and our current academic expectations? But then I also have to relate back to my tech department, who wants to talk about the connectivity and the numbers and all of those components that come into it too. So I've really got to be able to juggle both of those hats and make sure that those people can have conversations, making sure that my teachers go into it open-minded, but that my tech directors are realistic. That's what I think my non-techno role would be in that process.
I feel like I should do the robot. I think this, like, I would honestly say that I don't see myself as a tech savvy leader. I don't think I'm tech savvy in any way, shape, or form to me, it's about being a learner, not being tech savvy or non-tech savvy. So any leader who kind of comes to the table with this mindset of, well, I'm not tech savvy, so I can't help with the Chromebook rollout or the iPad rollout or whatever, then I would just ask them to shift their mindset. Okay, so you're not tech savvy, but you're a learner, right? And as leaders, I think our role primarily is to model being learners first. And I don't mean that in a cliche way. I mean that in a very hands-on, actual way. How do you, with intentionality, learn every single day? And that learning can be anything. It could be what a routine looks like. It could be how to use a different tool or resource, or it can be learning about a technology, you know, integration, sort of either philosophy or approach or tool or whatever. But we can't let that whole "I'm not a tech savvy leader" be a roadblock. That's like no longer an excuse, right? So we're learners first, and as learners, we throw ourselves in the midst of it. And so I think as a leader, because I do believe that the sustainability and success of any initiative, no matter what it is, comes down to building leadership and then district leadership to support building leadership, right? We can't just keep throwing initiatives at people, but for some reason, education, it seems like we are. But if we are, then at least let's focus on the people and how we can best support their learning so that the integration of any initiative resonates not only on a professional level, but on a personal level. So it matters to people. So I think if we keep ourselves in that mindset of learner first, then we can successfully navigate any situation, whether we're tech savvy or not.
I mean, you all are both in roles where you're going into your, you know, Amber, you're going to, into your teachers' classrooms. Tony, you're going into, you know, your schools, and you're looking at the way that teachers are utilizing technology as part of these initiatives to, you know, to enhance the learning process or to complete some kind of curricular objective. I mean, what from a leadership standpoint, when it comes to initiatives like this, what, you know, where does PD play into this? Because this was something that I battled as director. I would, you know, and this is something that I've been constantly been working on is, you know, what is it that leaders should look at when they go into the classroom? And that all grew out of some professional development offerings that I offered to my principals that they were very, very resistant to. They felt like they either, it wasn't their role to look at how technology was being used in learning because, like, you know, like Tony said, oh, I'm not tech savvy enough. I don't know how to use the document camera or the Promethean board or what have you. Or they just felt like they already knew, oh, well, I can just go in there and I can tell if the teacher's standing in the front of the room, they're pressing some buttons, they're obviously tech savvy. So what role does professional development for leadership take in these types of initiatives?
I think that the PD should focus on developing a skill set, not on a tool or a resource. And so, because it could be a Chromebook today, but it could be an iPad tomorrow, or it could be some other device that hasn't been, you know, invented yet, or it could be a BYOD, which means 8,000 different, you know, devices. I almost have to, like, as leaders in education, we almost have to kind of be like veterinarians, because you don't know what's going to come in. You know, so a lot of doctors have the privilege of being a specialist in one area, right? You could be an endocrinologist, or you could be a podiatrist, or you could be whatever. And you get to zoom in on that one thing. As leaders and educators in general, we're like vets, right? We're like, you don't know what you're getting. And so you have to kind of know a little bit about everything. And the only way you can continue to learn a little bit about everything is by constantly being a learner. But PD needs to matter to people, and it needs to affect their skill set and help them build capacity, not just how to play with a tool. Although we do need to make time for playing with the tool as well. But I think the primary focus needs to be on skills. So
I love that analogy. I haven't heard that before, but that is a perfect way of looking at it. With our teachers, I really try to focus in on verbs and not nouns. When I'm looking at communicating or creating or any of those type of action items, I want them to feel comfortable with whatever tool that they have. We had an iPad rollout last year, and I told them that it did not matter how slowly we move forward in this rollout. We were going to roll. They could crawl. They just couldn't stand still or move backwards. And so we offered differentiated PD based on their comfort level of what they had, because I had teachers who didn't have a smartphone and I had teachers who were using Google Classroom. So in order to meet both of those needs, we really did have to focus in on the verb and what we were trying to accomplish. And then that way they could mix in their skills and also mix in their tools at a level where they felt comfortable. I wanted to make sure that they knew that I was there to support them. And if I didn't have an answer or experience within whatever realm we were talking about, I could connect them to people. That's one of the benefits of being tech savvy, if you will, is having connections and being engaged. Several of the words that we talked about earlier is that I could say, hey, Stephen, do you have a AUP? How does this work? Hey, Tony, what does it look like to use Instagram in a classroom? And we could tap into those resources of people who had been there and done that. I think it's important for leaders to be able to make those connections and to put themselves out there, because teachers have enough on their plates. They have an impossible job as it is. And all we do is add more to that plate. It doesn't seem like we're ever scooping anything off the side. So I look at my role as being the one who can help support them and connect them to people who are experts. Like Tony said, I don't know that I could build you a computer, but I'm definitely sure I could find just someone who can talk coding all day long. So recognizing that those need to be the roles that we can step in and take, PD is a piece along with that. Teachers have to be able to identify, this is where I'm strong, this is where I'm weak. Not as a matter of judgment or being evaluated, but just in a way of helping themselves grow the same way that we expect students to. If this is an area where you're struggling or you're unaware or unsure of things, let me provide the tools that you need in order to take that and move forward.
Well, and it, all of that fits directly in with those words that I think all three of us said between accelerated, agile, and growth. And that's being able to recognize, you know, being tech savvy doesn't mean you know everything there is to know about the document camera, the Promethean board, the iPad, the Chromebook. That, you know, if you have that skill set, awesome. Nobody's asking you to get to that point, but being able to recognize, hey, I know how these devices can be used for learning. I know the best ways that they can fit into the curriculum. And if I don't know, like Amber said, I have a network that I can go to say, hey, how are you doing this? How are you doing this? Can you come talk to me, or can you come talk to this teacher for 5 minutes about this? All of us, I think, who have engaged in personal learning networks have relied on each other multiple times to answer questions that we don't know the answer to. And that, to me, that's being tech savvy, is being able to recognize, hey, I know here's the support that I need to provide to someone. I may not have the answer, and I don't need to have the answer, but I need to at least be able to provide that support. I think that's great.
Hey, Stephen, over in the chat, Nancy made a comment. Rather than say Instagram, how can we communicate to a global audience using which platforms? That is genius, and especially for teachers who are looking to grow and do new things in their classroom. I always encourage people, don't go to your principal or your tech director or whoever and say, I want to use Twitter. Say, I want to connect my classrooms globally with a variety of this, and this. Again, looking at those verbs and not the nouns, because sometimes the nouns can scare people. And if you say, I want to go BYOD, that's a lot for someone to take on. But if you say, I want to empower my students to connect and create and all these other things, sometimes that's an easier conversation to start with. Then you can get to those nouns later in life. So I thought that was a really great point.
And what principal is going to say, no, I don't want your kids to globally connect.
Sorry. Exactly. Right. That's a bad idea.
And let's not forget this notion of, and someone commented, Nancy commented on teachers teaching teachers, but not only that, and I think Amber touched upon it earlier, like sometimes our teachers are overwhelmed, are stressed out, you know, are feeling like there's a lot going on. So they're not the only resource within our schools that we can tap. How about tapping our kids? Because our kids have an incredible wealth of knowledge and experience. I mean, our kids come to school with experiences that we almost, you know, do the opposite of when they get to school. So tap into those experiences that they come to school with, and let them be facilitators of professional development. We, you know, we did that at my former school. And it was like transformational for our staff to sit back and see the skills that our kids were bringing to the table. It allowed them to see the kids in a totally different light. And the kids were like so empowered to feel like peers with their teachers. You know, they were colleagues on some level, that they were sharing their expertise and their passion. So let's not forget that we can also tap on the shoulder of our kids and ask them to facilitate a conversation about connecting globally, or you know, curating and creating using a device, because they're amazingly skilled at that just based on their experiences. So
exactly, and the reality is they're doing those things. You know, if you look at kids who are you know, who really into gaming, or they're, you know, they're into Minecraft, or they play Call of Duty or whatever. They're working on teams with people from other countries already. They're already doing those things. They're out there creating, you know. Makerspaces are this new idea in schools, but they're not for kids, because kids have been doing that, you know, for forever. You know, so if we can rely and we can see kids as experts, even as kids, they have so much to offer us. That's such a wonderful point. So let's talk about the next thing. So, even though Tony said he doesn't consider himself a tech savvy leader, I do, and it's my webinar and I say you are. So, so what is it that makes you a tech savvy leader? How did you get started in, you know, in a lot of people ask me all the time, oh, how'd you get started on Twitter? How did you get to where you are today? And so the same thing for you all, what is it that drives your learning to do what you do every day in order to not just share with your local communities and to pour your heart and soul into your work for your kids and for your schools, but for your own self? What is it that drives your learning? How did you start? And then how do you continue your learning? Let's chunk it up. Let's talk about how you got started in your learning.
Tony, go ahead.
Honestly, it was just a feeling of isolation that I was trying to navigate as a building principal, where there was no assistant principal and I was the only person in that position. Although there were other principals in the district, I felt somewhat isolated, and I also felt stagnant. Like I had not really been learning as much as I could be learning. And so without being able to learn as much as possible, I wasn't able to model that for our kids and our staff. And I wasn't able to bring in new ideas or fresh perspectives. And so for me, it was reading an article in Scholastic Administrator with Eric on the cover, touting Twitter and its power of connecting educators. And I saw that as sort of a gateway to not only getting over this whole feeling of being isolated, but also being able to access other people who were experiencing the same things that I was experiencing, and could give me insight and perspective that would help me learn and grow and inform my practice and enhance my craft. And so for me, it was sort of a need that came out of feeling alone and not sure about how to, you know, do the next step. And that's what got me connected.
Amber?
I went to the BLC conference in Boston in 2008, and there was a session on the Twitters. And I thought, okay, I'll go check it out. And they told you to pick a screen name. And I was like, Amber, already taken. Okay, what about Amber 8? Already taken. Okay, what about 8 Amber 8? Not taken. So little did I know then that down the road, I would be referenced and referred to and somewhat known by my Twitter handle. So had I known that, I probably would have been a little more professional in my 8 Amber 8-ness, which again, I know Stephen and Tony can appreciate the fact that I'm a big fan of Troy Aikman, and his number was 8. And so it's me surrounded by Troy, which is definitely a good thing. And so that's where that came from. But literally from 2008, I think everybody goes through those Twitter stages where you get on, you log in, and you just think, okay, that was fun, but I don't have time for it. And as more and more educators started to get connected, I'm a very social person, and that's natural for me to want input from a lot of people. And it's hard when you're a teacher or in a technology position, because you may be the only one in your building or department that's doing what you do. And Twitter really allowed me to start to make connections, and it completely transformed everything that I do in every way that I do it. And now being connected to people who are phenomenal at what they do can't help but make me better. And so, like I said, I taught fourth grade. And so if you want some fourth grade advice, I'm your girl. But I never taught kindergarten for a reason. And being able to connect to phenomenal kindergarten teachers across the world makes a huge amount of difference in my role as an administrator, because it's not advice from somebody who's never done it, but it's making a connection to my teachers and somebody who does what you do and is in the trenches with you. And I'm just going to connect y'all together, and he can help you out or she can help you out. The same goes for any facet or grade level, from music to third grade ELA. It really has connected and allowed me to connect my people to what they need.
Are the Cowboys still a thing? I'm not really.
Oh,
sure
I'm
that.
Sorry. I'm pretty sure they're in the playoffs right now. Unlike the
just a little thing. Yeah.
If it doesn't have four wheels and go in a circle, I don't care. So, So we know how you got started, and I think a lot of apparently there's a lot of Cowboy fans. I've made a lot of people upset.
There are a lot of Texas people.
I didn't know that they were still a thing.
And non-Texas
people. How do you continue your learning today? What are some things that you can suggest to other people to help them drive their own to help drive their own continued learning? What are your favorite things to do?
He used a NASCAR reference there. Did you see that? To drive our own learning. Well, for me, this is my second year as a principal, as an administrator, the principal on the building. And I took a lot of time off last year, just focusing on my job and my position. And towards the end of the year, when I really was able to step back and try to figure out what was missing from my world, why wasn't my bucket filled both professionally and personally, a lot of it was that I had cut out all of the things that being connected offered. I didn't go to conferences and I wasn't involved in Twitter chats. And I'd really just kind of cut back on some of those connections. So now that is what I use to grow and continue to grow. I may not have time to sit down and read a book, as phenomenal as both of your books are, but I can jump on Twitter and take part in a chat, because 140 characters can be a really great idea that I could put to work tomorrow versus reading a book, disseminating, kind of letting that percolate and then make it happen. So ed camps and conferences and Twitter chats, all of which are free. Even if you can't attend ASCD or ISTE that are coming up, you can follow along with the hashtag and learn from home and still get a lot of really, really great motivation and inspiration and almost reassurance that there are other people doing what you do and having the same thoughts or wanting to do different things like you are.
I agree with Amber. I love Twitter. I love a good Twitter chat, whether it's participating or just kind of following the discussion and looking at resources that people are sharing. But what has happened for me over the last like 6 to 8 months has been sort of a shift in my Facebook experience. And I think it's because a lot more of my PLN has become part of my Facebook family. Not everyone. I do try to connect with people that at least I've met once in real life. I mean, not that Twitter's not real life, but, you know, like in person. And so I have found that when I'm struggling with something professionally or when I'm thinking about something professionally, that Facebook actually now is the first place I go. And it could be not a rant. It could just be a drop of a thought, or it could be a question. Like I recently had a question about reading assessments. Hey, what reading assessment tools are you using in your district or whatever? And the conversation that flowed was like crazy. The responses, to see the commonalities across the country, to see the different resources that people are using. And so suddenly, much like Amber said earlier, you go to your trusted sort of network, right? The people that you know have an expertise that you may not. It's there. And there's something about the Facebook thread, or I don't know what, that has worked nicely for me of late. The other thing I will say, just like a little secret, and I don't know if anyone's watching that would know me in my professional context, but none of the people I work with or teachers or community members where I work are my Facebook friends. Not that I ever post anything negative, but even if it's just a question that I have, I don't want it to be misinterpreted as like a critique of something or a direction we might be heading. And so I am mindful. There are certain things I put on Facebook, and because the PLN has sort of, you know, bled into that world as well, the resources and the shares has shaped my thinking and has really refined my practice. So
look inward. What drives your learning? What sets you apart? What is it that makes you do? And because it would be just look at the people who are around you. You know, this is Tom Whippy and I who do EdChat have had this conversation many, many, many times. What is it that drives connected leaders who are different from others? You know, what is it about those colleagues who aren't connected, who don't see the value? What is it that sets both of you apart to be able to do what you do every day, to have this tremendous impact that you're already having on your school communities? What is it that makes you different? Not everybody at once.
Go ahead, Tony.
I think it's pretty simple. Like, I think we're incredibly comfortable being novices. And putting ourselves in the position of, I don't know, and I need to learn, and I want to know what's better. I think it's, like, for me, the motivation every single day is I want to create a school or a school community that I would want my son in, that I would want like to be ideal for him. And so that means learning as much as I can and accessing the people that I think are doing amazing things or have incredible ideas that my mind is vacant of a lot of ideas, and on some days more vacant than others. But I know that I can reach out to so many people and suddenly an idea is sparked. Like today I had a conversation with a principal at one of our elementary schools who was thinking about professional resources and how to share them with her staff, and looked at Twitter, and our friend Dr. Brad Gustafson in Minnesota had a great shot of his faculty lounge, I think, where he had like different shelves for books to be displayed. And I was like, look at that. What do you think about that idea? And, you know, we ran with it. I'm not creative in that way. So I saw something and was willing to share it. So self-admittedly saying, I don't know, and being comfortable with I don't know, is, I think, an important mindset that a lot of the people that I've connected with through the PLN share, and being willing to learn through social interactions, like recognizing that although we may not be sitting in the same space, we are building relationships and we are socializing. And there's a whole, you know, hotbed of research about social learning theory and how you learn through these social interactions, because you can deliberate and share ideas. So
I think it's that, like Tony said, the smartest, I love the quote that the smartest person in the room is the room. And the more that I learn, the more that I realize that I don't know. And the more that I experience, the more I realize I haven't experienced. And so that just keep pushes you forward. I think if you isolate yourself and you work in that silo where you aren't aware that there is new and different and challenging and inspiring stuff happening all around you, if you're not open to seeing that, it can complicate what you allow yourself to want to experience. And you go to conferences to get better, and you go to these resources to grow and to learn. But if you already think you know everything, you're probably not going to be open to it. And so I think it's important for anyone who wants to be in any leadership role, whether it's the teacher in the classroom or teacher or a student on student council, you have to recognize that there's a lot that we don't know, and being open and willing to hear and to see and to grow. I think that's important. The more that I know, the better off we all are. Right.
And can I just say one thing, is also linking it to our kids. I was in a fourth grade classroom recently, and a kid was talking about a book they read by Sharon Creech, and he loved it. He was doing a whole book talk for his classmates. I sent Sharon Creech a tweet because we had connected on Twitter a couple of other times. She responded to this kid, and to be able to show him that, to be able to say, hey, look, Sharon Creech, this author that you're, you know, you're reading a book by, responded, you know, and I know, Amber, you can relate to it. And Sharon Creech is just one example. Peter Reynolds has responded to tweets. Linda Mullally Hunt has responded to tweets. Lisa Graff, like authors who kids are reading and they connect to these books. Now they suddenly have access to these people. Phil Bildner, like, they are real people, you know, who kids look up to. And so not only does that connectivity model learning for our staff and give us access to amazing people throughout the world, but it also gives our kids access. And so that's pretty awesome too.
And Tony, ultimately, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Amber.
Sorry, and this totally doesn't count, but it should count. You know what else it does? Is it shows our students what else Twitter can be used for. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a place to complain about snow days, but it shows them how to make connections to things where they can grow and they can learn. My kindergartners use Twitter, and my kindergartners use Instagram. And for me to recognize that at age 5, they see those tools as something more than whatever it is that they choose to, my 15-year-old uses it for, totally different purpose. But that's not a place for them to go and be ugly or inappropriate or complain. It's a place, a tool for them to connect to authors or real life people doing things. And so I think that that's super important too, that we're modeling, hey teachers, this isn't about what Justin Bieber did last night. This is where I go to get my professional learning. I think that that's an important facet for us to be able to showcase as well.
I mean, honestly, what I
nothing wrong with Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber.
I've got my Justin Bieber headset on.
Is Justin Bieber still a thing? I ultimately think it boils down to is the realization and recognizing that we go to work in a profession every day, not for ourselves, but for kids, and doing what's right by kids and doing what's best for kids, as both of you have just demonstrated in what you've talked about, is that there is a genuine caring about kids. And that's not to say that people who don't use Twitter or who aren't connected or who don't do this don't care about kids, but it's that realizing that I can be even more for my students. I can be even better for my kids and my buildings by doing these things, by helping open doors to authors, or by helping connect them to social media tools that that would be considered non-traditional. I mean, it's amazing, Amber. You know, I go out and I talk about social media, and I talk about, you know, 5-year-olds using Snapchat to record, you know, what it is they're learning. And the butts in the seats get real tight when you start talking about Snapchat in schools. And so when you realize that, you know, we have to think outside of our norm of what we recognize as what our world is that we're teaching kids to live in their world. Mm-hmm. That's really the ultimate thing that sets it apart, is that what we're doing every day is for kids, and that we're trying to do right by them. So again, on behalf of everybody, thank you for your leadership. Let's get into some specifics. So shameless plug, I wrote a book about being a tech savvy administrator called The Tech Savvy Administrator. You can buy it. It's from ASED. In there, I break tools down for administrators, because the whole point is to help administrators feel more comfortable with technology in order for that they can better see and use technology in the classroom and see how it's being used in the classroom. So we've got a few minutes before we got to move on. Let's talk about favorite tools for communication, for effective communication. What are those tools that you use to communicate with your school communities?
Tony, Amber? Can we go first? Okay. I'll go first. That way Tony can't steal mine. I send out weekly the two tools that I probably go to communicate. If it's not, again, talking different forms of social media, I use S'more, which is an online digital newsletter. It can be printed out for those who have a different population, but mine all have access to email or a smartphone, which can be opened and used there. But it is a digital flyer that allows me to embed links and videos and documents, things that I need, pictures. So I send that out to my community and my staff, two separate ones, on Thursday and Friday of every single week. Within those two, for anything that I want to showcase, I use Canva, which is an online pic editing software that makes everything look fancy and fabulous. I'm a big fan of making things attractive. I like a good font. I like a good clip art. I'm very elementary driven, so secondary people have to tolerate me. But I think that it's important to make it visual and to make it kind of stand out. And I want something easy for people to see and grasp. And Canva lets me create little pictures or flyers or calendars or posters, whatever I need, and makes it look fabulous. And so I can put both of those two things together and kind of smash them, if you will, and share that. And it links to Facebook. It links to Twitter. It also provides really important information, like I can tell when it is opened. I can tell how long people spend on each link. I can tell which images are at the top that get more attention than versus what's at the bottom. So any of that information that whenever you have S'more and you pay for the, what is the stuff called? Steven, what's the fancy word? The data that it provides. It's Monday afternoon. I'm an elementary principal. What is that word, Tony?
The
analytics,
all the stuff.
The analytics, that's the word. Analytics. All of the analytics. Good grief. Sorry. He gets the Reese's. He gets the peanut butter cup. Allows me to be so much more intentional, because I know when to send it out to my parents, when it gets the most reaction, and when it gets the most response. So not only is it attractive and easy to use, but I can be very, very intentional how I use it.
Yes to all of those things. So I ditto to what Amber said. I will say that as being in a new position as an assistant superintendent, I don't have as much direct contact with families. A lot of the information gets filtered through our principals, which is awesome, and they do a really great job. But I will say that as a building principal, in addition to what Amber shared, one of my favorite things to do was to use YouTube. To use the TouchCast app to create these weekly video updates with our kids that we would then upload to YouTube and then send a link out to our community. And it kind of gave our families an insight each week into what was going on in our classrooms, like K-5, with, you know, some like upcoming events and stuff like that. I do think there's something to be said for photos and for video, and like Amber said, like something that's visually and aesthetically pleasing, because people do respond to that. But I think analytics are incredibly important as well, because you want to go look, are people opening the emails that you're sending? Because if they're not, then it doesn't matter how pretty it is in there or what information is in there, they're not accessing it. I also noticed that Jeremy mentioned Adobe Spark there. Amy Fadeji, who is an awesome elementary principal in California, She and I were recently texting about this, and it's a free resource that you can access with your Google account. And so that's there too. Padlet, someone mentioned in the chat bar. I love Padlet. I also like ThingLink. I never say it right. So there are a bunch of different platforms. A good old Google Doc is a great way to amass resources and just send out a link to everyone. It doesn't have to be pretty or fancy, but I do think it just has to be accessible.
And you touched on the notion of video. I mean, it used to be when I first started in my position as instructional technology director, one of the things our schools wanted to do was install these, you know, multimedia broadcasting TV studios. And that was at a time when that's what you really had to have in order to be able to do a broadcast in your school. Now, I mean, you just grab your phone and you can broadcast to the entire world through Periscope or through Touchcast or through Facebook Live or anything like that. Joe's a really good example. Joe, who's in the chat, who's the superintendent from Wisconsin, go Crickets. A great example. I see videos on Instagram all the time of the kids talking about the great things that they're doing there. I mean, it's so easy today to be able to break down those walls between the community and the school that need to be broken down. With just the devices that we carry in our pockets, it's just so much easier today.
We do our announcements, our live announcements, our Facebook Live, and my parents love it. They love it.
Yeah, you just took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say Periscope or Facebook Live, and also recognizing tools like Word Swag is a great way to make like pretty little posters. If that's something you want to put like on a poster to share out with the world, I don't necessarily always do that well. But that's one of those things. And also Audio Boom. And Joe Sanfilippo taught me about that as a way to create like a little podcast. Just walk around the district and capture moments or walk around the building. And so there could be an audio component, if not a video component. But people like to see kids or hear kids. Kids take the edge off of anything, whatever information you want to share. It suddenly becomes a lot more adorable and accessible when it's featuring kids in some way.
What about your favorite tools for collaboration?
Good.
Tony, you go first since Amber went first last time.
There's so many ways to collaborate. And like I said, I feel like, you know, for us as people who are connected, but have also nurtured friendships and relationships with people. Like you can contact, I text Amber if I have a question, or I might send you a Facebook message. I love Voxer. Voxer is another, well, I don't love Voxer. I shouldn't say that. I don't love Voxer because it stresses me out to feel compelled to respond to people. But it is a great way to reach out to people and say, hey, how do you do this? Google Hangouts are wonderful to just get a group of people together and just share some ideas. So those are some of the top tools. I also love, we use an app internally called GroupMe. And it's like a texting app, but it also is web-based. So if you're sitting at your computer, you can text people. And we as an administrative team use that to share information across our district. Links and videos can go in it too. So GroupMe is another nice little resource. So.
And I would stay simple and say Google. Again, if you're looking at something that is just easy and could integrate into a lot of different formats. Google Docs, you can't get much easier than trying to collaborate and share on something that is a fluid document that you can see live. When I have spreadsheets or things for my teachers that we need to work on, I can send them that link on their phone. They can log in and update what I need whenever I need it. It's also accessible wherever I'm at, which is handy. And then having the ability for, if I have a book to review from one of you fabulous gentlemen, being able to have that shared in a space where I can annotate and share and send back is super, super handy. So I'm a big fan of collaborating through all of that.
All right. How do you stay organized? What are your what tools do you use just for yourself to stay organized?
I just blogged about that today, Stephen. You like read my mind. Tony, do you want to go? Or you want me to go?
I'm looking at my desk. I'm not the one that should answer that question.
Well, I love the fact that within Google, I don't have to be super, super organized. As long as I can remember something about what it's about, you can search in Google. And that's so much easier than the way that I used to on my PC, create 5,000 folders with 5,000 subfolders that I had to be super particular about where I stuck things. In Google, being able to just search through that drive for documents is phenomenal. I'm a paper planner girl. So I wrote again today about my love for Erin Condren and how I keep everything in my world in one place, because you'll have a work email and then you'll have a home personal email and then you'll take this to a meeting and get this information. So I use a paper planner, which is probably not the tech savvy leader answer, but it's what keeps me straight. So
it works.
Yeah, it definitely works. And anything that keeps you straight is good. One of the things that I use is like voice memos. Like sometimes I'll just in the car, I often have these ideas as I'm driving to work and I have no one else to tell them to. So I just open my voice. I think it's called voice memos, whatever the app is on my iPhone. And I just leave myself a message. And I also use that when I want to blog. And I love Amber, that you mentioned blogging. I actually wanted to talk about that earlier, because that's some of the best professional development that I've given myself over the last like 4 or 5 years is blogging and just critically reflecting on where I am and where I've been and where I hope to go. Definitely to all our educator friends out there, make time to reflect, because that's an amazing opportunity to learn and grow. So yeah.
Agreed.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. All right, we're going to skip that question because we already answered it. So we're going to go to our last question. So we're in New Year's. I'm sure everybody has made their New Year's resolutions that they will forget about in the next week or so. So what resolution should somebody who wants to be more tech savvy, what should they resolve to do this year? What are some suggestions that you have for people who want to follow in your footsteps to be more tech savvy?
I'm gonna say this: make a resolution to be more mindful and to be less focused on trying to multitask, because even the best tech savvy people need to be able to focus on one thing. So I actually this year intentionally didn't make any resolutions because I wanted to focus on all the awesomeness that already exists in my space. And one of those things was being mindful about what exists in my space. And so I will say, tech savvy or not, and whatever tools you want to integrate, whatever your goal is, make it manageable and focus on one thing and try to get as good as you can get and appreciate that experience when you've immersed yourself in it, because there's something to be said for that. And I'm not good at it, but it is something to be mindful of.
I think intentionality. I think that recognizing that that's a goal, and that in order to accomplish a goal, you have to take steps, right? It's one of the things I wrote about today, is that instead of setting a goal, try to make it a part of your system, because those are things that are sustainable versus like, I achieved a goal and then now what? I'm done. I'm a tech savvy leader today, but like we talked about earlier, a week from now, you're going to be obsolete if you don't continue that mindset of wanting to grow and to be a learner. So I think that being intentional and recognizing that you're going to have to take those risks and plan on those risks, write them down, put those as part of your calendar, attend this ed camp or participate in this chat or connect with these people. That intentionality of being tech savvy is something that can last the entire year. It's not something I think that any of us would say that we've accomplished and now we're done. So it's something, again, that goes back to what we said earlier, having that mindset.
Very good. So I'm going to let anybody, if they have a question, to type it in the chat while you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you. Tony, I want you to plug your books. Amber, I want you to plug anything that you're working on, because that's why you're here, is to not only for your knowledge, but to let everybody know how they can learn more from you. So Amber, why don't you start? Where can they find you? Where can they read about you? Where can they learn more about you?
Well, we talked about it earlier. My Twitter is 8amber8. And so I enjoy being loquacious in that space. So you can definitely connect with me there. I also blog at amberteeman.com, so I'll put that in the chat. But that is somewhere where I do a lot of my reflection, and I write probably more for myself than I do for anyone else, but I hear some really great things from people who are either in the same place as me or along the same place as me and can learn and grow from that. I've made a lot of really great connections from blog posts and things of that nature. So again, that was amberteeman.com, and on that site you can find my email should you have a question or a need that I can help you out with.
And she'll drop that in the chat so you don't have to write it down.
Right now, indeed.
She's doing it. She's doing it. I just dropped the link to my blog there as well. It's leadingmotivatedlearners.blogspot. I think it's .com. I hope I got that right. I also, I don't know. I try to blog about once or twice a month if I can. I'm not really as diligent about it as I should be, but I also have had the benefit of co-authoring 3 books with Joe Sanfilippo, who was here in the chat. So our latest book is called Hacking Leadership, and I happen to have a copy of it here in my office, and I'm super excited about this, and I love this book and the work that's behind it. I feel like our heart is in it. We also wrote The Power of Branding, Telling Your School Story, with part of the Corwin Connected Ed series, which I know Steve, you and Tom were a part of as well. And then we wrote a book entitled Principal Professional Development, Leading Learning in a Digital Age. And so we had some really great experiences over the last several years in terms of our writing. You can find me at Tony Sinanis, or you can call my office.
Very important. Doing now.
they're already calling.
They're already calling.
Somebody wants coffee. They're already.
Someone wants me badly. Yes. But if you find me on Twitter or DM me, I'm happy to return, share my text, my cell phone number, and find me on Voxer, although I'm not great with Voxer. Twitter is probably the best way to initiate a connection.
Awesome. So everybody who was just telling you congratulations in the chat and talking about how funny it is somebody tried to call a hotline. Peggy said a hotline to Tony. Listen, this was I had such a good time. I don't know. I could easily drag this out for another hour, but I don't know that my face can stand from smiling so much more because of how much fun it was. This was awesome. I hope everybody who came, please go buy Tony's books. Amber's going to write a book, because one day I'm going to make her write a book, because she has lots to share too. You know,
agreed.
Go check out, and especially, I haven't read Amber's latest blog post yet, but I'm sure it's amazing. I have read Tony's latest blog posts on the joy of reading. Go do yourself a favor and go read it. It is awesome. Go read it and go share it far and wide. Go look at the work that these guys are doing, and then not just the work that they're doing, but the work that they're sharing from others, because that's also valuable too. So make sure you check them out. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you guys so much for taking some time out of your day. I know that you all are super busy, and I appreciate you taking the hour to join us.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.